The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour I'm going to be reading to you from AARP Magazine for April and May 2018. Got a nice article here that I found online by Rick Steves called Savvy Senior Travelers. And then we'll see how much the time allows today. Our programming today is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. You can call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now, let's look at Rick Steves, see what he's got to say for Savvy Senior Travelers. Guidebook author and travel TV host Rick Steves is America's most respected authority on European travel. Rick took his first trip to Europe in 1969, visiting piano factories with his father, a piano importer. As an 18-year-old, Rick began traveling on his own, funding his trips by teaching piano lessons. In 1976, he started his business, Rick Steves Europe, which has grown from a one-man operation to a company with a staff of 100 full-time, well-traveled employees at his headquarters in Washington State. There, he produces more than 50 guidebooks on European travel, America's most popular travel series on public television, a weekly hour-long national public radio show, a weekly syndicated column, and free travel information available through his travel center and ricksteves.com. Rick Steves' Europe also runs a successful European tour program. Rick Steves lives and works in his hometown of Edmonds, Washington. His office window overlooks his old junior high school. You can email Rick at rick@ricksteves.com, or you can write to him care of 130 4th Avenue North, Edmonds, Washington, 98020. More people than ever are hocking their rockers and buying plane tickets. Many senior adventurers are proclaiming, age matters only if you're a cheese. Travel is their fountain of youth. I'm not a senior yet, so I polled my readers via my travel forums, asking seniors to share their advice. Thanks to the many who responded, here's a summary of top tips from seniors who believe it's never too late to have a happy childhood. When to go. If you're retired and can travel whenever you want, it's smart to aim for shoulder season, April through mid-June or September and October. This allows you to avoid the most exhausting things about European travel, crowds, and the heat of summer. Travel insurance. Seniors pay more for travel insurance, but are also more likely to need it. Find out exactly whether and how your medical insurance works overseas. Medicare is not valid outside the U.S. except in very limited circumstances. Check your supplemental insurance coverage for exclusions. Pre-existing conditions are a problem, especially if you are over 70, but some plans will waive those exclusions. When considering additional travel insurance, pay close attention to evacuation insurance, which covers the substantial expense of getting you to adequate medical care in case of an emergency, especially if you're too ill to fly commercially. Packing. Packing light is especially important for seniors. When you pack light, you're younger. To lighten your load, take fewer clothing items and do laundry more often. Fit it all in a rollerboard suitcase. Don't try to haul a big bag. Figure out ways to smoothly carry your luggage so you're not wrestling with several bulky items. For example, if you bring a second bag, make it a small one that stacks neatly or even attaches on top of your wheeled bag. Carry an extra pair of eyeglasses if you wear them, and bring along a magnifying glass if it'll help you read detailed maps and small print schedules. A small notebook is handy for jotting down facts and reminders, such as your hotel room number or metro stop. Doing so will lessen your anxiety about forgetting these details, keeping your mind clear and uncluttered. Medications and health. it's best to take a full supply of any medications with you and leave them in their original containers. Finding a pharmacy and filling a prescription in Europe isn't necessarily difficult, but it can be time-consuming. Plus, non-prescription medications, such as vitamins or supplements, may not be available abroad in the same form you're used to. Pharmacists overseas are often unfamiliar with American brand names, so you may have to use the generic name instead. For example, atorvastatin instead of Lipitor. Before you leave, ask your doctor for a list of the precise generic names of your medications and the names of equivalent medications. See my general advice on getting medical help in Europe. If you wear hearing aids, be sure to bring spare batteries. It can be difficult to find a specific size in Europe. If your mobility is limited, see my tips and resources for travelers with disabilities. Flying. If you're not flying direct, check your bag. Because if you have to transfer to a connecting flight at a huge, busy airport, your carry-on bag will become a lug-around drag. If you're a slow walker, request a wheelchair or an electric cart when you book your seat so you can easily make any connecting flights. Since cramped legroom can be a concern for seniors, book early to reserve aisle seats or splurge on roomier Economy Plus or First Class. Stay hydrated during long flights and take short walks hourly to minimize the slight chance of getting a blood clot. Accommodations. If stairs are a problem, request a ground floor room. Think about the pros and cons of where you sleep. If you stay near the train station at the edge of town, you'll minimize carrying your bag on arrival. On the other hand, staying in the city center gives you a convenient place to take a break between sites, and you can take a taxi on arrival to reduce lugging your bags. No matter where you stay, ask about your accommodation's accessibility quirks before you book. Find out whether it's at the top of a steep hill, has an elevator or stairs to upper floors, and so on. Getting around. Subways involve a lot of walking and stairs, and are a pain with luggage. Consider using city buses or taxis instead, and when out and about with your luggage, take a taxi. If you're renting a car, be warned that some countries and some car rental companies have an upper age limit. To avoid unpleasant surprises, mention your age when you reserve. Senior discounts. Just showing your gray hair or passport can snag you a discount at many sites and even some events such as concerts. The British call discounts concessions. Look also for pensioners' rates. Always ask about discounts, even if you don't see posted information about one. You may be surprised. But note that at some sites, U.S. citizens aren't eligible for senior discounts. Seniors can get deals on point-to-point rail tickets in Austria, Belgium, Great Britain, Finland, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and Norway. Qualifying ages range from 60 to 67 years old. To get rail discounts in most countries, including Austria, Britain, Germany, Italy, and Spain, and a second tier of discounts in France, you must purchase a senior card at a local train station, valid for a year, but it can be worthwhile even on a short trip if you take several train trips during your stay. Most rail passes don't offer senior discounts, but passes for Britain as well as the Balkans do give seniors a break. Sightseeing. Many museums have elevators, and even if these are freight elevators not open to the public, the staff might bend the rules for older travelers. Take advantage of the benches in museums. Sit down frequently to enjoy the art and rest your feet. Go late in the day for fewer crowds and cooler temperatures. Many museums offer loaner wheelchairs. Take bus tours, usually 2 hours long, for a painless overview of the highlights. Boat tours of the harbor, river, lake, or fjord are a pleasure. Hire an English-speaking cabbie to take you on a tour of a city or region. If it's hot, spring for an air-conditioned taxi. Or participate in the life of local seniors, such as joining a tea dance at a senior center. If you're traveling with others but need a rest break, set up a rendezvous point. Some find that one day of active sightseeing needs to be followed by a quiet day to recharge the batteries. for easy sightseeing, grab a table at a sidewalk cafe for a drink and people watching. Educational and volunteer opportunities. For a more meaningful cross-cultural experience, consider going on an educational tour such as those run by Rhodes Scholar, formerly Elder Hostel, which offers study programs around the world designed for those over 55. 1 to 4 weeks. Call or check online for a free catalog or telephone 800-454-5768. Long-term trips. Becoming a temporary part of a community can be particularly rewarding. Settle down and stay a while, doing side trips if you choose. You can rent a house or an apartment, or go a more affordable route and swap houses for a few weeks with someone in an area you're interested in. If you're considering retiring abroad, two good resources are the Living Abroad series from Moon Books, which offers a country-by-country look at the challenges and rewards of life overseas, and Expat Exchange, where you'll find tips and resources for expatriates. More tips. The AARP provides an extensive online library of travel-related articles and advice for seniors, including destination guides, budget travel recommendations, and an interactive trip finder. The AARP also offers information on retiring abroad. Now, here's an article from the April-May issue of AARP magazine called Real Dreams. Drifting through aquamarine mornings in still Caribbean waters, stalking one of the world's most elusive fish, welcome to my bucket list adventure in paradise. This is by John Gluck, who is Executive Director of Talent Development and Special Projects at Hearst, and he has written and edited for Vogue, New York, and Men's Journal, among other publications. He also teaches journalism at New York University. Bonefish at 2 o'clock, 30 feet. I was barely half an hour into a three-day fishing adventure-slash-dream trip off Grand Bahama Island, and my guide, Jason Franklin, had already spied our prey. He had cut the engine of his skiff and was pulling us gondola-style across a secluded lagoon. The early morning light was a soft, buttery yellow, the water sapphire blue. There wasn't a hotel, cruise ship, or other sign of humanity in sight. The few tiny unnamed islands we could see had nothing but mangroves lining their white sand shores. Robinson Crusoe would have felt right at home. I turned and spotted the telltale wake. My heart thumped and my hands began to shake. A fisherman can go for long, maddening hours combing vast swaths of ocean without spotting, let alone landing, a bonefish. There's a reason the elusive, devilishly camouflaged species is also known as the gray ghost of the flats. I tried to cast my fly in front of my target to lead him, but after a long winter back home in New York City, I was rusty. My line landed on his back, and he took off. My blunder was potentially catastrophic. It was anyone's guess how many more chances we'd have. Just 2 minutes later, however, Franklin said, "Tails, 50 feet, 3 o'clock, three of them." To a fisherman, the only thing sweeter than the sight of a bonefish is the sight of a tailing bonefish. As the fish eat, pinning shrimp and crabs to the ocean floor, their tails can poke above the surface, providing a seductive target. This time Franklin suggested I hop out of the boat and wade quietly toward the fish to edge close without the boat scaring them off. I cast again, and what appeared to be the largest of the pack went for my fly. I was too slow to set the hook, and I missed him. Strike two. A minute later, Franklin pointed out a school of four more bonefish moving straight across our bow. I cast again, and this time, boom, I hooked one. The fish took off across the lagoon at cartoon speed, a signature rooster tail trailing behind him. In an instant, he was 50 yards away. A moment later, 100. After 5 minutes or so, just when I had managed to reel him alongside the boat, he sped away again. Finally, after one last tussle, I landed him, removed the hook from his mouth, and released him into the clear water. "Not a bad morning," Franklin said. Not a bad day, I replied. As bucket list adventures go, you'd be hard-pressed to top bone fishing in the Bahamas. Pioneered in the early 20th century by traditional anglers looking for a novel thrill, bone fishing isn't about dropping a worm in a pond and hoping for the best. It's more like hunting, with all of that sport's heart-pounding, Hemingway-esque romance, only more genteel. Bone fishermen generally adhere to a catch-and-release policy. It's just as well, since the fish are indeed too bony for most people's taste. Hemingway himself was an accomplished bone fisherman, as were baseball legend Ted Williams and the Western writer Zane Grey. Poling in a small skiff or wading on foot, you stalk your prey across shallow ocean flats. Once you spot a fish, you try to cast your fly, or in this case, an imitation crab or shrimp, into it in a way that looks natural. Found in some of the world's most stunning locales, the Albula vulpes has an exotic tropical beauty. Though the fish aren't especially large, 3 to 5 pounders are the norm, with trophies topping 10 pounds, the lightning speed they exhibit when they run and the tenacious fight they put up makes them one of the world's most sought-after sport fish. And not just by men. According to an outdoor sports polling group, more than a quarter of American anglers are women. Bahamas fishing guides say that 15 to 25% of their bone fishing clients are women. Many couples fish together. Bone fishing's wide appeal makes sense. You're in a beautiful setting. Your adrenaline is pumping and the focus required has a way of erasing all your other cares. Or, as Franklin put it, it's bloody zen, isn't it? With a practically endless supply of the kind of shallow water flats that bonefish like to inhabit, the Bahamas are widely recognized as the bone fishing capital of the world, and Grand Bahama, the northernmost island in the chain, is known for its abundance of large specimens. On my trip, I fished with an outfitter, H2O Bone Fishing, known for its top flight guides and ready access to prime water. I had caught bonefish before in Belize and elsewhere in the Bahamas, but they were of unremarkable size. For years, I'd been dreaming of landing a trophy, something truly special. Grand Bahama, I'd come to learn, was the ideal place to do that, the land of giants. If the first morning was a blessing, the next day and a half were a curse. It was as if a switch had been turned off. We poled and poled and poled some more, but failed to catch or even see much of anything. My guide on the second day, a veteran local angler named Kevin Reed, led us to one seemingly promising spot after another, to no avail. The issues seemed to be that the tides were unusually high, pushing the fish off the flats and into water too deep for us to see them. For a while, we ran across sea turtles, barracuda, lemon nurse and black-tip sharks, and stingrays. Though after a time, even they disappeared. It's like a desert out here, Reed said. As it happens, I had undergone a root canal procedure back home just before I left. I told Reed that this hurt worse. My third day was actually a half day. I had to be off the water by 11 o'clock to make my flight home, and it too started off without a fish in sight. Around 10 a.m., I decided something had to be done. "Anyone know a good fish dance?" I asked. "We need to change our juju." David Yellen, the photographer for this story, who was accompanying Reed and me on the boat, is an avid deep-sea fisherman. He told us he always seemed to catch fish after he makes a phone call. "What are you waiting for?" I inquired. He called his father, chatted with him for a minute, then hung up. "Feel free to disbelieve me if you like, but not 2 minutes later, we saw a tailing bonefish, the first fish we'd spotted in what felt like forever. When I waded out, though, I missed him. And when another tail popped up a moment later, I whiffed that fish, too. I hopped back into the boat. With just 20 minutes left before we needed to go, Reed began poling in the direction of the boat ramp. The mood was grim. No one spoke. You would have thought we were headed to a burial at sea. I was just about to put away my rod when Reed said in a hushed voice, "Bonefish at 12 o'clock, coming right at you." It was clear this would be my last shot, and the clock was ticking. Yet I somehow managed to keep calm. I spotted the fish, cast to him, and set the hook. A few minutes and a whoop or two later, I had him in hand. He wasn't the monster I'd hoped for, but he was pushing 3 pounds, the best fish of the trip. Plus, I'd broken a day-long drought and ended my outing on a high note with just minutes to spare. Call it a piscine buzzer-beater. On the way back to the boat ramp, amid the easy chatter that's a sure sign people on a boat have caught a fish, a thought occurred to me. I am a grown man who had just spent the better part of 3 days and no small amount of money standing on the bow of a tiny skiff in nearly 100-degree heat, chasing a notoriously difficult-to-find species of fish across a wide expanse of ocean in an attempt to catch maybe a handful or two of them, only to throw them back, becoming alternately despondent and elated in the process. By all rights, I should have felt ridiculous. Instead, I looked at Reed, gave him a fist bump, and asked, "What's the best time of year to come back?" Now, Gluck's got a few tips here for potential bone fishers, which I'll pass on to you in case you've got any plans. He says, if you go, unless you're experienced, it's best and in some cases required that you hire a guide who can teach you to cast a fly and lead you to the top spots. Most provide basic gear, such as rods and reels. Beginners can learn quickly, and because fly fishing is as much about finesse as strength, the sport is as accessible to women as to men. Here are 3 popular outfitters with rates per person double occupancy, ranging from $1,100 to $2,900 for 2 days of guided fishing and 3 nights of lodging. Contact the outfitter for details. We have H2O Bone Fishing, and their website is h2obonefishing.com. In Lucaya on Grand Bahama, it offers multi-day guided trips with lodging at the laid-back Pelican Bay Hotel. Or you have Deepwater K, which is deepwaterk.com. Legendary Bahamian Lodge on the east end of Grand Bahama provides adventure packages and upscale accommodations. And you have Bayer's Lodge, that's spelled B-A-I-R, and that's at bayerslodge.com. On the sparsely populated island of South Andros, features guided tips together with a traditional fishing lodge setting. Now we'll do a few selections from the upfront section of AARP magazine, which is just some little short, you know, tips and advice and whatnot. Here's one that says, I feel like I don't get the joke half the time. Am I normal? Answer, yes. Don't worry, you're not becoming crustier. Research shows that humor appreciation does not decrease with age. In fact, it increases, explains Uma Suryadevara, a geriatric psychiatrist with University of Florida Health. But that's assuming you get the joke. It takes multiple regions of your brain to resolve the incongruities that make something funny, and such cognitive flexibility tends to decline with age, Suryadevara adds. Also, to get a joke, you and the joke teller need to share a frame of reference. When people tell me jokes from South Park or Family Guy, I often don't get the humor, she says. When that happens, you can just politely laugh along. Now, here's one. Cover yourself. A better gown for doctor visits? Put your hands together. You can do that now that you won't need to hold them closed to hold closed that embarrassing backside gap. As part of a design challenge, for which AARP contributed prize money, students at New York City's Parsons School of Design crafted a kimono-style patient gown with a box pleat in back. Manufacturer Care Plus Wear is testing this new dignity provider at a Maryland medical center. Well, good for them. And here is Growing Neighborhoods. In these developments, residents get a taste of country life. From his home in California, in a California planned community, Paul Stroff walks 5 minutes to get his fix. amateur made a freak, the 77-year-old retired cosmetics executive admits. At the end of his stroll is Essentia Farm, where he spends time helping to tend the produce. An emerging trend in residential planning is building around a small farm. The community pays a professional farmer to oversee it, and volunteers split up the bounty. Ed McMahon, a senior fellow at the Urban Land Institute and a proponent of AgriHoods, says some 100 developments across the country have embraced the concept. Farms are less expensive to build than fairways, McMahon notes. At Serenby, a growing community outside Atlanta with plans for some age-restricted housing, three restaurants, a coffee shop, and a grocery store all feature neighborhood farm produce. Stroff's community, Rancho Mission Viejo, includes a farm for residents age 55 and up, with raised beds that ease back strain, plus other perks. One young guy started growing hops, so we held a beer-making workshop. The results were quite good. And here, bright ideas, LED, FYI. The retail price of LED light bulbs has dropped roughly 90% since their early days. LEDs use 80 to 90% less electricity than incandescent bulbs and last for years, saving you big cash and trips up the ladder. But know your terms. Replacement wattage is the wattage of the incandescent bulb that the LED is meant to replace, a rough brightness equivalency. Wattage. This is the actual power used by the LED bulb. A typical household LED uses about 8 to 20 watts, so if the fixture says 60 watts maximum, you have plenty of capacity to spare. Lumens. It's the real measure of brightness. The more lumens per watt, the more energy efficient the bulb is. CCT. Correlated color temperature is measured in kelvins and describes the tone of light emitted. In general, use warm or soft white bulbs, 3000 K or below, for bedrooms and living rooms. Cool white, 3100 to 4500 K, for bathrooms, and daylight, above 4600 K, for outdoors or workrooms. Dimmable. An LED bulb will work with a dimmer switch only if the package explicitly says so. And finally, a couple of tips for spotless sleep, recipe for rest. Did you know you should clean pillows every 3 months to get rid of skin cells and sweat? For pillows labeled washable, try this. Ingredients: liquid laundry detergent, half cup washing soda, 5 drops lavender oil, 2 smelly pillows. Add enough detergent for a full load. Set the washing machine to warm or hot. Add the washing soda. As the water fills, then the lavender oil. Put 2 pillows placed evenly to keep the drum balanced in the machine. Run the gentle cycle. Insert the pillows into the dryer on low heat for a full cycle. And now we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you'll listen next week. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and our programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic, which welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. So long until next time.